A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be talking with our friend Toby Leary from the Civil Rights Coalition in Massachusetts, owner of Cape Gunworks as well, talking about the latest in the fight to restore freedom in Massachusetts and the opposition. Is starting to come out in force. Boston Globe with a op-ed today from Brady United Against Gun Violence organizing director J.P. Thomas, who says there are two crucial things Massachusetts voters need to know about a referendum on the November ballot to repeal a 2024 common sense gun safety law. Yeah. He says, first, the ballot question was seeded with $50,000 from gunmaker Smith & Wesson, as opposed to the millions of dollars that, you know, Michael Bloomberg has spent on pro-gun control referendums in states like Maine and elsewhere, right? Oh, $50,000. Oh, my goodness gracious. Where's my fainting couch? He says, a second, if the ballot question is approved, it will become a blueprint for the firearms industry to start rolling back strong gun laws in state after state, exposing more Americans to violence. You know, sadly, and as we'll talk about with Toby, there's plenty of violence in Massachusetts with these quote-unquote strong gun laws. In fact, there's more violence in Massachusetts than there is violence in states like New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, that don't have the same restrictive gun laws that are in place in Massachusetts. This is not about public safety. Chapter 135 is not about going after violent criminals. It's about going after your right to keep and bear arms. It's about going after an individual freedom, a fundamental civil right, and turning it into a privilege that is doled out by the state to those they deem worthy. You don't start with the right to keep and bear arms in Massachusetts. You start by being a prohibited person. And then you are allowed to own a firearm. If the state says, yeah, it's okay. If you jump through all of the hoops and hurdles. It's not a right that can be taken from you if you, you know, commit a violent offense, if you're adjudicated as mentally ill. No, you don't possess it to begin with. You got to earn it, baby. And again, only those who are approved, only those who are suitable, only those who are deemed fit get to exercise that privilege to keep and carry a gun in Massachusetts. And again, the voters have a chance to undo that. To turn the focus back to violent criminals as opposed to turning lawful gun owners into paperwork criminals. And the Civil Rights Coalition is leading that fight. Very pleased that Toby Leary could be with us on the program once again to talk about the latest efforts there and to rebut the latest arguments from the anti-2A lobby. Take a look and a listen. Toby, it's good to see you. Thanks so much for coming on the program again.
My pleasure, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And not that you weren't famous already, but you're a little more famous today because the Brady campaign is going after the Civil Rights Coalition. You know that you're on target when you start taking fire like this, right? And the gun control lobby, I think they're really concerned about this ballot referendum that's coming up in November.
I hope so. And or better yet, I think we have given them good reason to be so, because frankly, they've kicked the hornet's nest and the people of Massachusetts are not going to sit idly by, and I believe are going to take matters into their own hands and vote on November 3rd to repeal this horrible law. That's been our messaging all along, Cam, is whether you're for guns, against guns, indifferent to guns, doesn't really matter. What's at stake is a constitutional right has been severely infringed, and in a horrible process of how that was done by people who don't have the right to do it. And, yeah, you know, just for that reason alone, if you love freedom, you love, the process that this country has established from the foundation on, you should be very concerned about what is happening in Massachusetts with, you know, your Second Amendment rights, with the ballot petitions that go ignored, that are voted and passed by 72% of the electorate that are, and then watching the Beacon Hill pass a law that says they don't have to honor the will of the people, and telling the courts that if they decide to challenge this new law that they pass, the courts don't have the right to do that. Like, they think they're kings at this point and queens in government. And I know that term gets thrown around a lot, but we knew we would attract the attention of Brady and every town and Moms Demand and all the usual suspects who will look at this as a must-win state. And that's why I say all the time, I've said it on your show a couple times, that Massachusetts' incredible relevance to the creation of our country has re kind of come into the spotlight and needs to reaffirm freedom a second time for the same reason that freedom kicked off 251 years ago when they came for the guns. The Second Amendment is on the ballot, and we need to be that beacon of light and give hope to other states that, hey, you don't need to take this sitting down. There's things you can do in your own state to bring tyranny back, to tell tyrants, you can't do that, And so that's really what we're up against.
And I mean, it's interesting because you talk about 251 years ago, and even before, Lexington and Concord. I mean, we saw this sort of decade-long crisis in Massachusetts from, the time that the Stamp Act was implemented in 1765, and the first bit, every bit of resistance was met with a bigger and bigger crackdown by, the British government. And at one point, they passed what we call the Intolerable Acts. They shut down the Port of Boston. They suspended the legislature. Basically said, you guys can't meet. As you say, the Parliament and the King were acting like tyrants. And you look at what's going on today, not just with Chapter 135 and the gun control, but as you alluded to, this bill that was, or this referendum that was passed by almost 75% of the voters in the state of Massachusetts that said we want the auditor to go in and audit the legislature. The legislature then goes back, passes their own law that says, nah, you can't do that, and then tries to tell the courts, ah, and you can't oversee any litigation on this either. That is an intolerable act on the part of the Massachusetts legislature. The way that Chapter 135 was put in place over the objections of gun owners. Governor Maury Healey retroactively making this emergency legislation so that the law would not be suspended because you guys had gathered enough signatures so that it would be suspended until the referendum was held. And then she goes around and immediately suspends enforcement of large parts of Chapter 135. That's an intolerable act. So I think that you are right in drawing a direct line to what the government was doing in Massachusetts 250 years ago, 260 years ago, and what is happening in Massachusetts today. And this is an opportunity for the people of Massachusetts to use the ballot box, not the cartridge box, but to use the ballot box to send a message to the government that this will not be tolerated. And I hope the Massachusetts residents take advantage of this opportunity to do so, because honestly, you guys are getting ramrodded and just steamrolled by the legislature there, and it's appalling to see.
Well, what's interesting too is I think that one of the ways of looking at that Hamani decision that came down last week, and how the courts were the Supreme Court was very concerned about that free disposition of people's rights, basically disposing them of their rights without due process. This puts Chapter 135 squarely in the target of this latest Supreme Court ruling, which was 9-0, as everybody knows. And Massachusetts has been doing this for decades, where if you have somebody who has a red flag or a restraining order taken out against them, it could even be fraudulently taken out, as we saw in the case of Samuel Lacus, the 23-year-old from East Springfield. His ex-girlfriend took out a restraining order against him and never even showed up at the hearing. So obviously it wasn't too concerning. But in the meantime, the police show up at your door, demand your license to carry, and every gun you own, You haven't been adjudicated by anybody as a danger to yourself or others. This whole process of taking and disposing you of your property and your rights without due process, I think, was just brought into sharp focus by the Supreme Court in Massachusetts. I said that right after this decision. I said, here's looking at you, Massachusetts, because you have ruined people's lives over this very thing. And there's so many people that have had their lives turned upside down, tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees if they can afford it, or have some court-appointed attorney, or go to jail for lawfully and legally owned and possessed items that are constitutionally protected, that the court, I mean, that the state has used this no due process methodology to dispose people of their constitutional rights. And I hope and I pray that those days are numbered. And I know the people on the other side are going to be freaking out, but Chapter 135 was one of the biggest ways that they touted this in the legislature and in the media, was it strengthens red flag laws. They're going to make sure that bad people don't have guns. But the interesting thing, Cam, is if that person is such a danger to themselves of others or others, how come they only violate their Second Amendment rights? They don't arrest them. They don't take their steak knives, their hammers, their baseball bats, their cars. They don't put them on house arrest. They don't put collars on them, GPS tracking devices. All they do is dispossess them of their right to keep and bear arms. And I hope those days are numbered.
And then you look at the flip side of that, right? So then we've got the career criminals in Massachusetts who aren't affected by Chapter 135 at all, right? There was the guy who, again, shot at Memorial Drive in Cambridge. He was a convicted felon. He was supposed to check in with his parole officer that day. Managed to get a hold of a gun that's banned in Massachusetts, even though he's not legally allowed to possess a single round of ammunition. Over the weekend in Mattapan, there was a carjacking. Guy steals a car, throws somebody out of the driver's seat, gets behind the wheel, and then hits and kills a pedestrian a short distance later. He's been charged with a number of offenses, including murder, carjacking, leaving the scene of an accident resulting in death. And it was MassLive.com who pointed out that this guy, between 2009 and 2023, had at least 15 criminal cases, abuse prevention, restraining orders filed in West Roxbury and Roxbury courts. They said his past criminal case included a January 2023 charge, so just a little more than 3 years ago, of assault with a dangerous weapon. Other charges include assault and battery, threat to commit a crime, firearm carry without a license, violation of abuse prevention order, various motor vehicle infractions. In the assault with a dangerous weapon case, he pleaded guilty. He was sentenced to a year in the House of Corrections. That's it, by the way. And that was suspended for 18 months. He was ordered to participate in a certified batterers program and stay away from the victim. So you've got people, Toby, like Kyle Culotta, who are accused of a possessory crime, possessing a gun in Massachusetts without a license. He's considered dangerous. He's held without bail for 4 months, looking at a decade or more behind bars. Then you've got a guy who's actually accused of assault and battery, and he gets a year's prison sentence suspended. So essentially a slap on the wrist and sent on his way. Again, I know that Massachusetts has a deserved reputation for being a liberal place. I find it impossible to believe that a majority of Massachusetts residents, when looking at those two cases, would say, yeah, that's what justice looks like. Let's put the veteran behind bars for a decade for possessing a gun that he could legally own in Arizona. It's just that he was traveling through Massachusetts when he was pulled over. Yeah, he deserves a decade behind bars. This guy, who is, a repeat violent offender, yeah, he deserves a year, 18 months probation. That's what he deserves.
The saddest part is it's all part of their plan. And we have a one-party rule in this state, and I don't like to make gun issues political, but they kind of do it for you. And under the massdems.gov website, you can go there, I mean not gov, massdems.org website, you can go there and click on our platform, and it brings up the entire document of what they want to do in this and how they want Massachusetts to be shaped. There's a whole section on criminal justice. They don't like mandatory minimum sentences. They want to leave it up to the discretion of judges. They want to make sure that no new prisons are built. They want to make sure that people get a deferment, if possible, for violent crimes instead of incarceration. They also want to make sure every person who is actually manages to be incarcerated, that they can have laptops, they can have Wi-Fi, they can have internet access, and that they can vote from prison. These are all very important to the people that the powers that be in the state of Massachusetts. And all the while on page six, they say that they want to revise the Second Amendment for meaningful and strong gun control. That's their plan for the Second Amendment. And then, unfortunately, we have one of the lowest incarceration rates in the country, if not the lowest, and the highest rate of incarceration because, I mean, cost of incarceration because our prisons and jails are empty in Massachusetts, but you still have all the carrying costs of mortgages and electric bills and staff and COs and everything else. It's about $330,000 a year per inmate to incarcerate someone in the state of Massachusetts because of that reason, because the jails are empty. And so they want to close jails, they want to empty them, and they want to put violent career criminals back out on the street, as you pointed out. And what is the ramification of that? What is the implication of that for our society? Well, we are the most violent state in New England because we reward criminal behavior and we throw the book at good people and make it hard for them to exercise their rights. Yet to our north, we have the state of New Hampshire, which has virtually no laws around firearms, very few anyway. You can own suppressors, you can own AR-15s, you can own any size magazine you want, you can own any type of gun you want. You don't have to have a special permit or license issued to buy those guns, just a regular government-issued ID.
We're to
And
carry.
yeah, and they are the safest state in the nation, Cam, and they touch borders with our state. They literally are the same demographic people from top to bottom, and it's not like they're a border state or we're a border state or any of that. The big difference here, what really everyone should look at, is how do we treat violent criminals and how do we treat lawful people? Because the contrast couldn't be any different. In New Hampshire, you have freedom. In Massachusetts, you have tyranny. And what it ultimately translates to on the street is a much more violent society. While the rest of the country enjoyed, I think it was an almost double-digit drop in murder rate across the country, Massachusetts went up 30%. Every other state was enjoying, safety and security and a drop in that. And we have to suffer under the consequences of the rulers that be that want to make sure that they reward bad behavior. And I think that is the con only contrast you really voters should look to November 3rd is, hey, New Hampshire gets an F rating out of Giffords and every town on the annual election scorecard. Massachusetts gets an A. We were upgraded from an A minus to an A, but yet we are the most violent state in New England. Make it make sense for me, Cam. I can't figure it out.
I think you did just figure it out. And again, it's because gun control has nothing to do with public safety. It has everything to do with control, right? And not just control of firearms, but control of gun owners. And it doesn't have to be this way. That's the thing that I hope Massachusetts voters will remember. It doesn't have to be this way. And the lawmakers are going to fight you tooth and nail, but Massachusetts is one of those places where, I know a lot of folks get confused between the difference between a republic and a democracy. Massachusetts is one of those, it's maybe the state that is the most small d democratic, not in terms of the party, but in terms of you guys have town meetings. There is direct voter participation in the referendum process. And the people of Massachusetts do have a chance to make a difference and to make a change this November. And I hope that they take advantage of that. Toby, if folks want to help out with the Civil Rights Coalition, whether they are in Massachusetts, outside of the state of Massachusetts, because no matter where you live, this is your fight too. How do they get involved? How can they support what you guys are doing there?
Yeah, thanks, Cam. They can go to thecivilrightscoalition.com. That's our website where you can sign up for our newsletter. You can sign up to volunteer if you're local, We're going to have a lot of people needed to, hold signs and get out literature and whatnot as we get closer to the election. And you can most importantly donate. That'll help fund the cause that we're gonna, be pedal to the metal from here till November 3rd. This Saturday we'll be at Pioneer Valley Arms in East Longmeadow for a big event. I know Attorney Dan Hagen will be there. He's giving a speech. I'll be there talking. I can't wait to meet everybody. So make sure you go check out Pioneer Valley Arms this Saturday from noon to 4. But going to the website is key, thecivilrightscoalition.com. And I'm glad you just mentioned how it has nothing to do with safety. It's all about control, because guess what? I want to start to steal a little thunder and say, repeal Chapter 135, vote no this November 3rd. Your safety depends on it.
There you go. Toby Leary, as always, my friend, thank you so much for joining me on the program. It's so good to see you in Massachusetts at the GOAL event, and I'm looking forward to talking to you here again in a couple of weeks.
Sounds great. Thanks, Cam. I appreciate you.
My thanks to Toby for joining us on the program, and please do support the Civil Rights Coalition if you can. They are doing outstanding work there in Massachusetts, and it is a fight that every gun around the country needs to support. All right, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. From city streets to mountain trails, your gear should go wherever life takes you. And that is why at Modern Rugged Leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather. It's designed to look sharp, last long, and tell a story of its own. Every stitch, every buckle, every strap reflecting timeless craftsmanship. And it's backed by a lifetime warranty, because quality shouldn't quit when the adventure begins. So whether it's the boardroom or the back roads, Modern Rugged Leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern Rugged Leather, modern style, timeless durability, and backed for life. Now, right now, if you go to modernrugged.com, you can get on the list. They are relaunching their website soon. They've got a bunch of new products coming, and you can sign up to be alerted when new collections drop. You'll get exclusive discounts and more. All you have to do is go to modernrugged.com, and soon you'll be able to find yours today. Again, that's modernrugged.com. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. By the way, I mentioned that Mattapan carjacking case that I talked about with Toby. That was yesterday's recidivist report. I didn't have access to all of the crimes that this guy had been accused of committing. I saw that he was charged in municipal court, and I forgot Massachusetts court system is so screwy, the names of these things. Typically, municipal courts in most states, they're for, misdemeanors, they're for citation-level offenses, they're not for serious violent felonies. That is not the case in Massachusetts. And so this individual, again, could have been, should have been behind bars, but instead, because Massachusetts treats violent criminals like that, he was out. And again, a guy like Kyle Culotta, who's accused of nothing more than possessing firearms that he could legally possess in his home state. He was looking originally at decades behind bars. Some of those charges have been dropped, but he is still looking at a significant amount of prison time if this case is not resolved. I had the opportunity to meet Kyle in person at the Gun Owners Action League event in Massachusetts. I'm looking forward to him being able to come on the program when it's appropriate for him to do so. But met him and his girlfriend. Super nice people. And again, it is just an injustice what is happening to Kyle. It is an injustice what is happening to too many lawful gun owners there in Massachusetts. All right, on to today's recidivist report, which does not come from Massachusetts. Instead, it's from North Carolina, where the suspect in a North Charlotte officer-involved shooting was on active parole for a prior charge, and in fact had just been arrested a few days earlier. This is from a WSOC TV in Charlotte. Jared Starks is the individual who was involved in the officer-involved shooting in the standoff on Saturday. And as they report, he had just been released from jail for allegedly stealing somebody's car. Police said that Starks was shooting at random cars with people inside on Saturday. He allegedly pointed his gun at an officer Saturday afternoon. He did not hit anybody, but he is well known to police. One victim told WSOC he belongs behind bars. Victim didn't want to share his name, but said that Starks sold his car last month. Police arrested Starks the next day. He said, "I expected him obviously to be in jail, but last Tuesday, jail records show he was released from custody because the stolen car case was voluntarily dismissed to the grand jury." meaning that the prosecutors decided, nah, we're not going to move forward with this case at this time. WSOC says that it could be temporary. The charges could come back at some point. But again, you caught somebody. Sounds like the evidence is pretty strong. Why not pursue the case? Victim said it was frankly terrifying to think that somebody who has this rap sheet, who's clearly dangerous, could just be released with no regard for public safety. Yeah, well, that's a deep blue city for you. WSOC reports that Starks has a long criminal history, served prison time for armed robbery, and was out on parole when the shooting happened on Saturday. On to today's armed citizen story. And you know, the right to keep your arms, primarily we talk about gun-involved self-defense cases, defensive gun uses. But, you know, knives are covered under the Second Amendment as well. And so this headline, pregnant teen stabs alleged attacker in act of self-defense, from the Sangamon County Sheriff's Office. I got to say, that one grabbed my attention. This, again, from Sangamon County, Illinois. An 18-year-old from Springfield arrested after he allegedly battered a pregnant teenager. And according to the Sheriff's Office, the pregnant teen stabbed him in self-defense. Both teens taken to the hospital. Officials with the Sangamon County Sheriff's Office said it was back on June 19th, just a couple of days ago. Deputies responded to an apartment complex for reported stabbing. Once they got there on the scene, just before 11:30 in the morning, first responders found 18-year-old Marcello Scott nearby with a non-life-threatening injury to the chest. First aid was provided there at the scene. He was taken to a local hospital. Deputies and Springfield police officers detained an 18-year-old female and her 17-year-old sister. The sheriff's office added that witnesses told law enforcement that the 18-year-old female entered a car outside and possibly had hid evidence in the vehicle. But after investigating, they learned that the incident actually stemmed from a domestic dispute between the 18-year-old female and Scott, saying that Scott had forced his way into the 18-year-old's apartment, had battered the teen, who's 7 months pregnant. Sheriff's office said in a news release, the 18-year-old victim, who was cooking at the time of the battery, used a small kitchen knife to defend herself and to prevent further injury to herself and to her unborn child. The 18-year-old female fully cooperated, directed detectives to the location of the knife and a can of bear spray that she obtained for self-defense. She was taken to a local hospital to be evaluated due to her pregnancy. Scott, after being treated at the local hospital, was taken to the Sangamon County Jail. He is facing potential charges of home invasion, aggravated domestic battery, and aggravated battery to a pregnant woman. Court records show a petition to deny. Pretrial release was filed on Monday. But under the Illinois Safety Act, it is quite possible that he'll be released without having to post any bail whatsoever. Might have an ankle monitor attached to him, but we know how well those work at actually keeping track of offenders. So I am glad that this 18-year-old was able to protect herself. I wish that Illinois made it easier for her to exercise her Second Amendment rights. I don't even know if it's possible. I know it's not possible for an 18-year-old to buy a handgun in Massachusetts or in Illinois. But I don't know if it's even possible for her to possess a long gun in Illinois. I'm looking that up real quick. Because, you know, so many states now have made it so that 18, 19, and 20-year-olds cannot exercise their Second Amendment rights at all. And this is, by the way, a situation that the Supreme Court could resolve. They have almost a half dozen cases right now that have been held over for months dealing with either the federal ban on handgun sales to 18 to 20-year-olds, state-level bans on concealed carry for 18 to 20-year-olds. And yeah, in Illinois, you have to be 21 years old to purchase or possess any firearm. Unless you have a valid FOID card, you can possess a long gun at that point. So I would recommend to this young lady that she go through the process of obtaining her FOID card, legally arming herself, because there is no guarantee that this individual is going to abide by any sort of protective order telling him to stay away in the future. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A woman in Baltimore who is looking for the Good Samaritan who returned some of her stolen stuff. The theft taking place over the weekend. Jerry Cruz woke up Sunday morning, learned that her car had been broken into, and several items had been taken, but they were there on her doorstep. And now she says she wants to be able to thank the Good Samaritan in person. She says she didn't realize what happened to her car until a neighbor reached out to her Sunday morning. At that point, hours had gone by. She said there's been some improvements in the neighborhood, but we still deal with a lot of crime issues. She said somebody hit my car window, my car mirror, and I dealt with that. She said that was like a car accident, but this time it was actually intentional. This was planned. This was on purpose. This was a criminal act. Inside the car, there were two big boxes filled with stuff to create a community garden. Yeah, nothing of real value, not, you know, jewels or anything like that. She says the items were bought with a grant and crowdfunded money. She said it wasn't my money I used to purchase these things, and I would have to replace it eventually. She said they're waiting for these items. My neighbors know it's coming. And she looked at her doorbell camera footage, and she said that she could see somebody carrying them and placing these boxes on her front steps. She said a neighbor of hers saw the person confront the would-be thieves, and now she wants to find them to recognize her act of kindness. She says, I want to say thank you. I want to give them a hug and let them know what they actually did. According to Baltimore PD, more than 1,900 cars have been broken into so far this year. They remind residents to keep the valuables out of cars, but, you know, obviously sometimes that's not, you're not really capable of doing that. Maybe you run in and you forget. In this case, you know, these items were valuable to Cruz, but not necessarily to thieves. I will say that that neighbor who confronted the car burglar, I'm glad that she was able to return these items. But I can't recommend doing that. Again, not unless you are able and prepared to defend yourself, because you don't know what that individual is capable of. They've already demonstrated they're capable of breaking into a car and stealing stuff. Are they capable of an act of physical violence if somebody confronts them and says, hey, what are you doing? So I would never tell somebody, hey, don't do the right thing. Don't look out for your neighbors. But I will say look out for yourself, too. And make sure that you can protect yourself if you're going to put yourself in a situation like that. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. I might be a little more sleepy looking than normal. I'm getting up bright and early on Wednesday and Thursday this week, sitting in for Larry O'Connor on O'Connor and Company. You can catch that on Salem News Channel and perhaps your local talk radio station. Looking forward to doing that. I may be on, yes, in fact, I will be. That ding was the folks at Newsmax asking if I could join Carl Higbee in the 6 p.m. Eastern hour tonight. So I will be on Newsmax this evening as well, but I'll be right back here tomorrow. Oh, and a week from today, still not sure what we're going to do with Cam and Company next Tuesday, because a week from today, I'm supposed to be driving up to Washington, D.C., and sitting down for interviews with ATF Director Robert Sakata and ATF General Counsel Robert Leiter. If you have questions that you would like to see me ask, I will let you know. Don't put it in the comments today, but later in the week, I will ask you, or maybe even next Monday, I'll ask you to give me some of the comments or some of the questions that you'd like to see posed to Sakata and Leiter when I have a sit-down with them next Tuesday. But I will be back tomorrow. Maybe not bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, but I will be here, and I'm looking forward to seeing you as well. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, keeping up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information. We did not get the Wolford versus Lopez decision from the Supreme Court today. The next opinion day is Thursday. There are 12 cases, including Wolford, that are still outstanding. So the odds are pretty good that we'll get that decision on Thursday. If not, it'll likely be early next week. Whenever it comes out, we've got you covered. And in the meantime, we've got you covered for all of the rest of the news impacting your right to keep and bear arms. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.